Welcome to Hope Talks, where we share inspiring stories of hope in Jesus Christ. Hope Talks is hosted by Pastor Margaret Michael and Grayson Willis. Join us for uplifting stories of triumph, faith, and the enduring power of Christ's love. Also, if you're in the listening area, tune in to 1470 AM or 102.1 FM WBTX to listen to Hope Talks every Sunday at noon.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Grayson Willis.
And I'm Pastor Margaret Michael.
Thanks for tuning in. And today we're joined by Edie Killian. Edie, how are you doing today?
Doing fine. Thank you.
And Edie's here to share her testimony with us today. Edie, just start out telling us about where you're from and about how you grew up.
Okay. I am one of six children. My parents were both from the Bridgewater, Briary Branch area. But I really lived in College Park, Maryland until eighth grade. And we attended with my mom the College Park Church of the Nazarene there. And I think that had a big influence on me there. On the weekends, we would come to the Spring Creek area because that's where my grandparents were. And we would visit there and attend the Spring Creek Church of the Nazarene. So I was familiar with that when we finally moved here after I was in eighth grade. I became a Christian at a VBS when I was about 5 or 6 years old. I went to the altar during an altar call, and I didn't really know exactly what I was doing, of course, because of my age, but I knew that God was speaking to me, and I just felt this burning in kind of in my heart, you know, to go down and ask the Lord into my life. Then I guess when I was in junior high, middle school, it's called different things, different places, but about seventh grade, our College Park Church of the Nazarene had a teen retreat, and I believe it was in New Jersey, in fact, and we spent the weekend there. That was a very dynamic youth group and had a lot of teen leaders. And so I admired those people for their leadership. And during that time, it was like a teen revival, and there were testimonies given, and I started reading my Bible and having my own devotions and started witnessing in my junior high school to kids. And so about the end of that time, eighth grade, my parents decided to move, and we moved to Spring Creek Church, and then I went to Turner Ashby and went to Spring Creek Church for 2 years there.
Yeah, I have two questions.
Okay.
One, I have come to realize that a lot of people from this area move to College Park, Maryland. Can you tell me why?
I've noticed that, too. It's interesting.
Steve's cousin.
Yes.
Who's... mom was a pastor, Ola Michael.
Yes.
JR's mom. And I know that I've heard just different people within the community. Was it better jobs, better paying jobs?
I think it was. So my dad, he worked here first with a construction company that then had jobs there.
Okay.
And so, and I know during part of that time, like, we had cousins that came and lived with us for a while and worked there, and then the Michaels, who were my dad's cousins, some of them, I think he worked with them too. So
yeah.
So it was family there too. Perhaps that's part of it. You know, you kind of go where you know some people, and then there's jobs, and you can kind of get a start in it, and until you get established yourself.
I've never asked anybody that question, and I'm like, I really wonder. I've never asked JR, and it's like, what caused that exodus from the valley up there, and then I watch people end up back here?
Yes.
You know?
When we were there, my dad always talked about moving back, and I always remember thinking, well, someday we're going to move back there, but not really knowing exactly what it was going to look like, I guess, because we were in suburbs. In suburbs of, in College Park is vastly different than out in the country, where you have a pump and outhouses and things like that at the time.
Right. Yeah. So the other question I have is, you came to Christ as a young girl, but then as a teenager, like it sounds like you, I think it, as a young girl, you accepted Christ on the level that you knew. Mm-hmm. You know, that was all of your heart.
Yeah.
That's all you know, everything you knew. And then as a teenager, God really got a hold of your heart.
Yeah.
And then you were uprooted.
Yes.
What was that like? Like you have this revival happening in your youth group and you're on fire. Mm-hmm. You're sharing, you're witnessing.
Mm-hmm. It was, so my junior high was pretty rough. There was a lot of drugs and stuff. And I had started witnessing to classmates when I was there. And I had to pray a lot about that because I was kind of shy and I was almost afraid of them. So I prayed a lot about doing that. So I really felt like I had grown a lot that year. And then there we were moving and I was just like, man, I just got used to being here. But then I was going to be going to high school, and I was a little concerned about high school because I'm like, junior high is like this way. We had bomb threats and things like that, you know. And so it actually was a relief once we got here because for me, because it was so much more calm, and like I didn't have to go along the wall of the while there was a fight going on to try to not get involved in that or that sort of thing. It was just, you know, I went to Turner Ashby, and it was a relief, actually.
It was a pretty respectable place compared to where you came from.
Yeah, so you compare what you had, and then it's like, okay, thank you, Lord. I think this is a blessing.
More of a small town feel.
Yes, it was. And so I started counting it as a blessing, and then I became pretty involved with the Spring Creek Church and with those teens, and I actually was teaching the teen Sunday school class for a little while because my aunt had been the teacher, and she said, would you do that? And I'm just like, wow, that was a step out for me to do that. But it also helped me to realize about teaching, that which I later did.
Yeah. But it was the start.
Yeah.
It's so neat to be able to look at a life and see the tapestry of how that starts.
You
know, someone believes in you enough to help you take that step, and then God does the rest, right?
Yes, because you wouldn't have done it otherwise. It's like you wouldn't have thought or realized that you could do it.
But it sounds like God prepared you before you came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really had given you some boldness and had just renewed that relationship. You were in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
That's really amazing. So you move here, you get into school, you're helping teach, and what happens next?
So my parents got a divorce my junior year of high school. And that was a pretty rough year. It was the beginning of spring of my junior year. And then my brother died that December of my senior year. Mm-hmm. And so my parents had divorced. And we were living in a farmhouse out there. And it was too hard. We couldn't go back. And so our pastor that had been there, he was now in Harrisonburg Church. And I had started coming into the Harrisonburg Church. I also, those last 2 years of high school, was on the Virginia Impact team. And so I made a lot of friends on the district. Yeah. And I say that, made friends that helped me through the family breakup and all that, anybody that kids go through the divorce too.
What was the Virginia Impact team? Tell us a little bit about that.
So it was on the district. And that was a blessing that God gave me too, because as a teenager back in junior high, the missionary books, there was a missionary book about college students doing summer missions. And I thought, I would like to do that. But they were going like overseas and stuff. I never wanted to go overseas. Mm-hmm. But I did want to do some kind of missions within the United States. And the impact team, we would go to different churches, and on Friday or Saturday night, or afternoon rather, we would go to the shopping centers and invite people to our services. And, you know, back then we did skits and cantatas, you know, musicals and things like that, and just inviting people to commit their life to the Lord. And so that gave me, you know, a whole new experience that I hadn't had before, and helped me to meet people who were other teens who were committed to the Lord. And so that just helped me to grow so much. And then that also helped me because then I ended up going to college with some of them, made friends, and one of them had asked me to be her roommate. And so, you know, you can just see how God uses little steps and little open doors and kind of shows you, because I've been praying about wanting to go to college. I always felt like I wanted to go to college. I really thought I wanted to be a teacher. And then at this point, when my parents divorced, it was just like, wow. I mean, my mom was, raising. My brother had died and sister had gotten married. So it ended up, she was with four of us. And so it was just like, I don't see where the money's going to come from. And my pastor had said, well, just pray about it. And people in the church prayed with me about it. And the doors opened up and I went to Tribeca. So had experiences there that then led me. Then my senior year, they were doing the missions that the colleges do that had been those missionary books that I'd read about before. And I'm just like, oh, here it is. You know, this is an opportunity and I don't have to go overseas. They had a group that went overseas, but then they had groups that were in the, I think it was, there were several cities in the United States. One of them was Dallas, Texas. And I didn't know which one I was going to go till near the end, but so you have a prep for that of studying scripture and devotions and meeting with the people on your campus. And then you go to a training in Colorado Springs, or we did then. I don't know if they still do it like that. And they taught us about doing puppet shows and things to kind of help the church. And so we, the group I was with, went to Dallas Central. And that summer, they were trying to decide if they were going to stay in downtown Dallas or if they were going to move out closer to the suburbs where a lot of the people had gone. And so we went to Boys and Girls Clubs, to some of the senior citizens' places. We went to parks, and we did skits and played games at some of the recreation centers with teens there and invited. And then we had kind of culminated in a great big Bible school at the end and invited the neighborhood people in for that. And it was a great Bible school, but at the end of that summer, then the people decided to change locations, and they left a Hispanic church there in the area that they had been in. And so kind of planted that church and then went out closer to the suburbs. And so anyway, that is where I also met my husband, because he was going to that church. And at the end of that summer, the family I had been hosted by, they had a company, and they invited me to work at their company because they knew I was looking for a job, and people were trying to get me to stay. I think there were several of the pastors working behind the scenes and on. So I ended up staying in Dallas for over 40 years, longer than I'd been anywhere, stayed anywhere.
So how long was that ministry experience through the school, or that you got connected through the school, through Tribeca?
It lasted a summer from, I think we got there June, and then, so beginning of June, like to the last of July.
So that was the summer after you graduated college.
Summer after I graduated, yeah. So I was looking for a home.
Yeah. So was it love at first sight when you saw Jackie?
No. We liked each other, and it seemed like a possibility. Yeah. But we really became friends, and he worked at the company that those people had invited me to work at. And and he lived in the neighborhood that I lived in. So we were going to the same church, and then carpooling, because I didn't have a car. I had my car had been totaled. A lady had run into me, and so I didn't have a car then. And so
he was your ride.
He was my ride.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness. Another.
Yeah.
But
God,
you all
ordained.
Became friends, and
yes,
I love that.
Became friends.
I think that's such a beautiful way to start a relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Start out as a friendship.
Yeah.
So you all dated?
Mm-hmm.
Or?
So I came there in 78, and we got married in 1980.
Okay.
Yeah. We have a daughter, Jennifer. She was born in 81. And then 3 years later, we had Michael. And Michael... was jaundiced when he was born, and so he had to stay extra in the hospital, and then took him home, I guess it was probably 7 weeks after he'd been born, took him to Christian daycare. I was working for the Southwestern Bell Yellow Pages at that time and had insurance and our health insurance. And so I was taking him there, and we realized that he had a hernia. So he was being evaluated for hernia surgery, and they're like, boy, he's still just very jaundiced. And so they went through like three different possibilities that his high bile count could be, and they kept eliminating the ones that were better, less problem, and came to the really scary one where a lot of the children didn't make it, didn't live past, nobody had hardly lived past 10 years old. And so really started praying a lot about that situation, and just a little tiny baby having to have surgeries and that sort of thing. He had a procedure that they really just were kind of following him along, the specialist, because it was a fairly new procedure. The guy had just done it, had a Japanese doctor, or actually one of the American doctors had gone over to Japan because they did this Kasai procedure, so Michael had that. And he was in an extended period of time at Children's Hospital there. He'd had already had another surgery before that, so by that time, I'd had my maternity leave. I didn't have any more time to take off with him, and I couldn't quit because I had our health insurance. So people at the church started a schedule, and they, while I was working, different ones would go up and sit with him and hold him and be with him, including my father-in-law at that time. He had retired. But so a lot of people got to know Michael then, and it meant a lot. They'd, you know, we'd come in, they'd say, oh, you know, he did this or that or whatever, you know, and give us an update on it. And so that was very unexpected and much appreciated. Then, in fact, a lot of people still say, oh, you know, how is he doing? Well, recently he actually found out that he was really jaundiced again, and he has some scarring, and he will probably have to have a liver transplant. And so he's kind of, I think he didn't really realize until recently what all that really meant, because he came off medicine, just has lived a normal life. Multivitamin was about it, and so he's was in the hospital, and they were looking at like really recent of needing to do a liver transplant for him. But he changed his diet and took some medicine and on. So he's been doing much better, but there's still it's kind of an inevitable thing. And so just trying to keep him healthy until then. And he has a cardiologist appointment to check that out in November. So continue to pray for him. And he always says he appreciates prayers for it. So
just to hear how the church came around and was able to be there and spend time with him. What a gift. It was so hard for you to be away from him, but to know that the people that loved you and loved Jesus were there standing in that gap. Yes. It's a beautiful picture of the church.
Yeah. When his surgery is like it, it was real early in the morning, and thought we were getting there early, and our pastor at the time was already there. Mm-hmm. He came out of Michael's room, and he said, I've been praying with Michael, and he said, you know, we're asking for God's blessing on him, and I wasn't expecting him to be there at all. He was actually there before we were. He said he had to go to do some things, but he wanted to be with him. So just...
It does matter when we show up, doesn't it? It matters
very much.
When people show up and surprise you early in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah. So you said you spent 40 years in Dallas area. Anything you want to share about your time there? And then how did you end up back in the Shenandoah Valley?
Okay. So I got into teaching, and the next year I also had breast cancer. And that was quite a challenge. and also the church people really helped me with that praying. And when I had my first surgery, Jackie and I got to the hospital, and they were already there. There were people there from the church there waiting and praying. And one of them, she was a nurse. She had had leukemia and was in, doing chemo and things like that. But she was there, and just people there to pray for us. And then, you know, brought food and things like that after I got home. And because they send you home, they were sending me home that day. But so just, and one of the teachers at the school I was working at, she would pray with me and all over the phone, and she sent me scripture, healing scriptures, you know, just things like that. And so the Lord really helps you when you're going through things to know through his people that he's looking, caring for you and loves you. So then during COVID, I was teaching at home through video to special education students. And in between, I would go out in the backyard just for a different viewpoint. And I just kind of wore a circle around the backyard praying about it, because I felt like God was calling me for something. Then my mom and brother were looking for a place to live, and it opened up that we bought the property that we moved to, and they were able to stay there. My mom was having health issues, and I really didn't want her to have to go through having to move, and she didn't want to move or, you know, or to change things. And so I thought, well, if this is God's will, it'll work out. The things, you know, that our house will get sold, we'll be able to, and we were able to purchase that property. Jackie will say yes, because I didn't think he was going to want to move. And so it all worked out. And so in 2020, that summer, then we came up and moved in on the property, and I took care of my mom. And then in 2021, she passed away from COVID, things that just had affected her health. She was already in bad health anyway. So, and we've been here since then. We really love it here. I've been involved. There are people I reestablished some friendships with, and I've been involved with the clothing donation center there. Christiane Denimore Hunsberger and I went to high school together, and Sue Pennington and I were in at Spring Creek as teens together, and so they both have worked there and encouraged me to work there. And then front desk, I wanted to meet more people there. And I also feel called to service. I mean, I did the teaching that I did. I felt like I was called there for those kids to help them, because I could teach them things, but also pray for them. I prayed in my classroom, you know, on a regular basis before the kids came around my room, and prayed at home for them. So I just feel like God, you know, wherever you need me, where I can be of service, that's where I want to be.
I cannot get out of my mind just you walking in the yard until you made a path around the yard. It shows your desperation to hear from God, and that you wanted him to open the doors and to work out all those details. And we can't deny the power of prayer. It does something. It doesn't mean that it always works out the way everything works where we want it to. But I think that I just think about that path in your backyard of where you prayed. And it's beautiful. It's just a beautiful thing to be able to just have that faith that I'm going to pray. And if it's to be, it'll be. And we had another gentleman on a few weeks ago, and he talked about when God was moving him from one place to another. And I said, can you tell us about that? Like, how did you know it was time to go? And he shared that he lost passion for where he was. And it sounded to me like that had happened for you.
Yes.
You knew that there was a next chapter.
Yes.
That you were finishing up where you were. And I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
It's just I've been thinking about that a lot. Yeah. Like, where am I passionate? Where am I not? You know, like, I'm still passionate, but
yes.
Yeah. It's just really neat to hear that come out up in your story, that you knew there was something different that God had for you.
That's an encouraging word to hear from you, because then it's like an aha moment of, oh, you know, because you don't always see it yourself, that what's going on until, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a question. You talked about having a heart, a desire for missions. Like, is that something that has continued? Do you still feel that? Like, is it more now you're serving in the church and in the community, and that kind of takes that place of, because you're on mission. I mean, what you are doing through the clothes closet and.
Yes, and I'm also kind of taking care of my brother right now and have some things going on that I'm trying to work out for him. I think we are always changing different. I guess I am kind of open to that. And I look and see, and also trying to make sure that I'm not spreading myself too thin, that that I don't have time to recharge, you know,
and fill your cup.
To fill my cup. And
caregiving is strenuous. And, you know, it is. When we caregive, we have to make sure we take care of ourselves because we can get really wrapped up in the caregiving and forget about our own health. So I'm really glad to hear that you're mindful of filling your cup. But you're in a season. And, you know, I think it helps to understand this is a season, you know, of, you know, caregiving for a family member. And that is mission. You're still on mission.
A lot of times, there's nobody else that's going to want to do it or willing to do it, is what I have found.
Well, and I do find, like, having been able to do some caregiving for family members that have gone on to glory, man, I am so glad that I did it. You know, like, I it's one of those things at the end of life you don't want to have any regrets. And so I just think it's hard work, but it is a beautiful thing to be able to take care and help others in life when they can't help themselves.
And also to show them Jesus. And I think about, no matter where I'm at, including that of, okay, am I showing Jesus? Because sometimes you get frustrated or our humanness comes out. And so it feels like God teaches you things. It's like, okay, God, what am I learning now? What are you trying to work out in my life? You know, to better me, to get me more prepared.
To be more like him.
To be more like him. And so I want to be open like that. I don't want to not be being used. I think that's what I've been concerned about, of just quitting and not being used by him. Where do you need me? I think that's really what I look at. You know, where do you need me? I'm not particularly gifted or talented in, you know, a big way or that sort of thing, but what do you want me to do?
You were talking about, you know, sometimes, like, Lord, what are you trying to teach me? And, you know, there's moments that we find ourselves maybe not being as patient as we'd like to be. And I remember my mom did a lot of caregiving for other older Mennonites when they were sick. And when she was then in bed and being cared for, she looked at me one day and she goes, I wish I'd have been a little more patient with those I cared for. Because everyone was so patient with her. I'm sure she did a great job taking care of other people. I think that God even uses those times to work on our own heart and where we are and helping us with how we love everyone.
Edie, it's been great to have you today. We call this program Hope Talks. So what's bringing you hope right now?
Little things like talking with you guys, and you realize that you're not alone, and that some of the things that you can encourage each other, you know, just sharing in that. And so I think that gives me hope that you're not by yourself trying to save the world, that God has people who are there to help you and love you and care for you.
Thank you. And you've brought hope to me today, Sharon. So thank you. Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. We pray that as you've heard Edie Killian's testimony today, that it truly has been a half hour of hope for your life. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg in partnership with Sunshine Ministries. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps us spread hope to even more listeners. Stay tuned for more uplifting stories in the next episode. Until then, keep the faith, share the love, and find joy in the hope that Jesus Christ brings.